Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who in 2003 and 2004 directed two episodes of One Tree Hill, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers. Wow. How was that, Robbie?
One Tree Hill.
Where do they film that at? What studio was that?
They filmed it in Wilmington, North Carolina. So it's funny because I did the last two seasons of Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
And I
Which was in North Carolina.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And I remember Chad Michael Murray was a guest star the last season. He did a recurring part on Dawson's Creek. And I remember all the Dawson's Creek actors were really kind of glad that the show was ending. They were, you know, bittersweet, but they were, all of them were ready to
move on.
6 years they did that show. Mm-hmm. And then Chad Michael Murray, who was a recurring guest star, says, "Oh, I got this pilot. Kind of a similar, you know, teen soap opera thingy. Yeah. And I think they're going to shoot it here in Wilmington when the Dawson's season is over." And so the crew and everybody from Dawson's Creek, the crew went over and shot the pilot. And then when it got picked up, came on to the show. So when I came back to do the first season, I didn't direct the pilot, but when I came back to do the first season, it was the same crew as Dawson's Creek. It was just a crazy, like, oh my God, we thought this teen drama in North Carolina was going to be over, and it's not.
It was just another name, a new show, same crew, almost a similar cast.
Yeah. Yes.
But the same sound stages, right? Everything.
Same stages, same film crew, same kind of, you know, teen drama.
Same craft service, same everything probably. Okay.
It was kind of surreal and bizarre.
That is kind of funny.
Yeah.
It's like a deja vu feeling that you got when he came back again. Okay.
And it was funny because the cast of One Tree Hill that first season, they were like all fresh and excited. And the cast of Dawson's Creek had
jaded.
They'd done this a while. Like the vibe with the actors totally went from like, you know,
meh to
been there, done that.
Yay, right?
Yeah. It was funny to come in with so many same faces, but a whole different vibe. Yeah.
Bet you it wasn't just you that was noticing that. I'm sure the rest of the crew, everyone, whether it was sound or camera, they're like, wow, these new actors, they're pretty excited to be here. They're not bored. So
Sure.
All right. Cool. Yeah. So this week's episode.
What is this week's episode?
This week's episode is Repression. Repression.
Interesting.
All right. Well, let's go watch this. Let's go watch this episode. We'll be right back with our recap and discussion of Repression. For those of you who are Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Hey, everyone. We're back from watching Repression. My goodness. There's so many plot twists and turns in this episode. I actually enjoyed this episode. So let's get right into it. Yeah, I did. You're going to give a negative review right now, I'm sure.
I don't know.
We
may have to agree to disagree on
that. All right, that's fine. Let's jump right into it. Let's do our poetry synopsis. Here is my haiku for Repression. Okay. Maquis are attacked. Tuvok can't figure it out. It was always him. Okay. Let's hear that limerick.
I like the reading.
Yeah.
The limerick for Repression. Tom and B'Elanna's date turns into a coma-inducing mystery. Tuvok goes on a double-agent mind-melding spree. Janeway pleads to his heart. Chakotay's command gets a restart. And at the double feature, the buttered popcorn is free.
Nice.
There you go.
Yeah, popcorn in there. That's good.
I had to get Tom and B'Elanna's you know, date and yeah. the buttered popcorn. Had to get that.
I wanted to talk about your movie night date, but it was just not enough in a haiku to squeeze.
I know. Limerick's got a little more space there.
All right. So were we right about, we did guess Ken Bilber, didn't we?
I think we did guess that he wrote it, but he's just the story.
He's just the story behind it.
The teleplay is by Mark Haskell Smith.
Which is who? I mean, this is clearly somebody on the writing staff that I don't remember at all. I'm like, who's Mark Smith?
I don't even think this is a writing staff. I think this was an outside assignment or something.
Really? Okay.
Anyway, Mark Haskell Smith, who I don't remember the name, the face, any of it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about his first credit.
Sure.
His first credit, as we do with all our actors and everyone, his first credit that I could find was a 1991 film called Inside Out, produced by the Playboy Channel.
What? See? Come again? He directed a Playboy movie? A Playboy Channel movie? He wrote a movie called
Inside Out. Now, here's the interesting thing. So, obviously, it's a Playboy After Dark. I don't know. Not your high-end intellectual feature film, let's say. But here's what's interesting. In this movie that Mark Haskell Smith wrote, his first writing credit that I could find, in this, an actor named Parley Bear was guest starring. He was in Sacred Ground, my very first directorial assignment. He was one of the old, the wise people sitting in the hallway, the three wise people. Parley Bear was one of those. He was an old character actor. He was in Mark Haskell Smith's first writing. So my first directing and Mark Haskell Smith's first writing.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Okay. So story by Ken Biller, Mark Haskell Smith, Rick Colby directed it.
All right. This is what I was going to say. When we were guessing the director, I was going to throw Colby's name out again. But I was going to, I felt, you know what? Robbie's going to ridicule me for saying that. Because
I can't believe
it. There's no way. But I
was
knew it.
So wrong. Rick has directed so many late season episodes.
Yes.
And I thought he left in like season four or five.
No.
And didn't come back.
No.
Our guest stars. Let's talk about our
please.
I want to We have a number of them. Tiro, who we see first in the episode, is played by Keith Sarabaka.
And he played Tiro Anidas, right?
Yes.
It sounds like one of those commercials where if you're suffering from Tiro Anidas, this might be what you can do.
Yes.
I mean, it just sounds like some type of medical condition. So
it does.
Okay.
It does. Like a lot of our aliens sound like medical condition. His first job was in 1979.
Oh.
A short-lived TV show called Bleacher Bums, Joe Mantello. Based on the play.
Bleacher Bums, which ran in Los Angeles for 5,000 weeks or something like that. It was the longest running.
And in Chicago
forever too, right? Yeah.
It was a bunch of Chicago Cubs fans sitting in the bleachers talking and comedy, and they made a TV show out of it.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
He was also a writer on that.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe he had something to do with that play.
Yeah, it sounds like it. My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
1979, his first job.
Yeah.
We also have Derek McGrath playing.
Who we've had before.
Chell.
Same actor.
Yes, he was on Learning Curve in season one, and now he's on this episode. I love Chell. I wish we had seen more of him.
He's
so
great.
He's the blue guy.
What's his first credit? Just for the
first credit, 1973, a movie with Jack Nicholson called The Last Detail.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
Nicholson, 73. Okay.
Yeah.
Who else do we have?
We also have Tabor. This is Jad
Major. Major.
Yeah.
Who's been around as well. Yeah.
Yep. Tabor. He was in fifth season, Nothing Human. And then this episode, his first job was 1990, the biopic thriller Reversal of Fortune.
Wow.
He was, I guess in a TV movie or something playing Alexander von Arsberg.
Okay.
So some kind of biopic.
Yeah.
Murder mystery thing
in 93. So really
90, you know, 1990.
Oh, 1990. Okay. And who else?
Major.
We have
Carol. Again, I can't pronounce this one. Carol, last name, K-R-N-I-C.
K-R-N-I-C. Yeah. Uh-huh. Kiernick.
Mm-hmm. She played Jor. Her first movie was, first job was a film in 1994 called Death Junction.
Wow. I wonder if her name is just a different spelling of Walter Koenig's last name, you know? Koenig, well, Koenig, it could be.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
German, yeah.
We have Mark Raphael Truitt playing Yosa.
Yosa.
His first job, 1994, yeah. The TV series The Untouchables, which ran for a year or two, I remember.
Did you notice from certain angles, he looks just like Brian Fuller? I was like, whoa, is Brian Fuller's face from that angle. So, okay, that's Yosa.
We have Ronald Robinson as Sec. That was that was Tuvok's son.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, yes, yes.
Ronald Robinson.
Yeah, it's a handsome young man playing
Handsome young man. Mm-hmm. First job, a 1991 TV movie called A Mother's Justice.
Okay.
And we have Scott Alan Smith as Doyle. Doyle was kind of the bald crewman that was part of the Maquis.
Oh, Maquis, and he was talking about, we don't trust these guys. Yeah, that guy. Okay.
He was in the 1992 series Brooklyn Bridge that starred Marion Ross from Happy Days as a kind of New York 1950s family. It was kind of a period dramedy. Mm-hmm. Gary David Goldberg, I think, created that. He was the Family Ties creator, so...
Oh,
it was about
also
his childhood,
growing
up in Brooklyn or something.
Goldberg does the Goldberg show as well, doesn't he?
No, different Goldberg. That's Adam Goldberg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone
that's
else?
Our cast. That's everybody. That was a
you
big
didn't
guest
get,
our cast.
You didn't get the most important person.
Who?
The person in the movie theater that turns around and goes, shh.
Who
who's
was
that?
That?
I don't know. I thought you would catch that person. I mean, doesn't that person get a credit for being the shusher? I mean,
the shusher...
Is that a looping group that would have done that? Or was that, did they use her actual?
I think you can have extras do that the way it used to be. You could have extras do that kind of thing. And they were still just paid as an extra. So it was not an actor role, even though they were doing
a sound out of their mouth.
A sound,
it's not
and
a
acting.
And so, well, now we know.
But that shush taught B'Elanna about how to go to the movies. Cause she'd never
been. Sure did. She had no clue.
And so B'Elanna at the very end, if you recall, shushes Janeway. Shush is very important.
Shall we move on to the opening shot?
Let's move on to the show.
You know that poster that he's looking at in the very beginning that Tiro is looking at? You see this? I've actually signed that poster at a convention.
Really?
It's a very cool poster. It's a graphic of Voyager. And it's funny because I'm looking at that room and it looks more like a teenager's room. You know, it's sort of like those posters don't look like they should be. I mean, they should be basically graphs and things that he's using. But they look like some.
They're very colorful.
Room. Yeah. And that kind of pulled me out a little bit.
Well, we see this room, this teenager's room. We see this Bajoran man looking over.
Yeah.
And he's talking in kind of a spiritual tone. It's like,
I wrote down. Prophets. Yeah, he was the Bajoran ASMR guru because he's whispering everything. It's a whole
And he's talking into a mic. It's like he's a podcaster. It's like
he's doing the first podcast.
Bajoran
podcast. ASMR podcast.
Yes.
Yes. And I wrote down as like a voodoo ritual. And
yes.
What did he say? He said, hug Tim Far. When I hit I had to hit the little show me the you know the dialogue because I thought he said Octen Far Atane, but it's Pog Tem Far Batane.
Batane.
And
which is this incantation, and you don't really know what he's doing, but you're going to learn later on what he's doing and why he's talking into a microphone.
Yes. And to me, when that little Bajoran word, that phrase, it sounds Persian or Iranian to me. Because the whole Far part, and I used to know I had a friend in college. The last name was Bustinfar, so his name was Babak Bustinfar. So to me, this guy was speaking Bajoran. He could have been saying Bustinfar Babak instead of Octinfar Atane. It was very, like I said, Persian to me. But he does see images of Maquis Torres, Maquis Chakotay, and Maquis Tuvok on that little laptop that he has. So now. You know, the audience is wondering what's happening.
Those images of Roxanne and her Maquis outfit.
They made him look younger too, correct?
They made him younger. It feels like they pulled frames from like the pilot or something, but
maybe
Photoshopped them in. Yeah. It was very kind of Photoshopped. Those
most definitely. Even Tuvok's image, even his face was Photoshopped as well, I noticed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But as an audience member, you're completely you're confused. You have no clue what's happening here. Like, who is this guy? Where is he? Is he just a fan of the Maquis? What is he doing? Is he fanboying? We have no clue. Nothing.
No clue. Then we go to Voyager, current day. We're in a hallway. B'Elanna and Tom are walking. She's got flowers. Tom says the secret to a happy marriage is keeping the romance alive.
Yeah.
And I made a note about Tom's fancy, awkward shirt. Cool question mark. Not cool. I'm not cool.
No, I'm going to say this. My first impression is that's a wonderful color on you. I like that because you don't see that blue. So that looks very nice. Yeah. My second impression was what the top part of what B'Elanna was wearing reminded me of that garment that you threw off of yourself. It was velour also. So that reminded me of that. But then, so at first I thought, gosh, that top looks really good. And then I started thinking, you know what? Now Robbie's wardrobe looks like he is the manager of the Westin in Honolulu.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You're going to walk in there and say, do you have a problem with your room, ma'am? Because I can make sure that we can give you an upgrade. That's what I felt.
It looks like a uniform from a hotel. You're absolutely right.
And so you felt the same thing. You did.
Partially is it looks like it's got too much starch in it. You know how like hotel uniforms... They're like commercially cleaned and pressed, and they just have
there's not a wrinkle there. Yes.
No,
yes.
That shirt looked like there was way too much starch in it, and it was just awkward.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now we know how you felt.
They walk into the holodeck door from the hallway, and we come inside, and we realize, oh, we're in a movie theater.
Yeah.
And I immediately had all these memories. First of all,
please tell me, where was this?
It was in the Heart Building. It was the screening room.
For the Heart Building screening room. Oh, now I get it.
So that screening room was in the Heart Building where our writers were, which originally that building was part of the RKO Radio Pictures movie lot that got bought by Paramount, and then they combined them.
Yeah.
So that was the RKO Radio Pictures screening room, probably
from
dailies.
From back in the day, right?
From way back in the day. And that's where Orson Welles screened dailies for Citizen Kane.
Oh, my gosh.
In that theater. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I did not even know the history of that until you brought that up. Like, I should have taken that more seriously. So the actual on the walls of that theater, is that how it looked, or was it dressed to look like that?
It looked like that. They didn't do much of anything in
there. It's sort of like a retro Art Deco sort of looking interior. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And by the way.
Yeah.
I used that little screening room. Yes. I got the studio to rent it or something. I screened one of my short films there for all of our crew that had volunteered. And I did it at lunch one day while we were filming. I used that theater to screen. I think it was The Battery. I think it was my first short film.
Did you invite us? Did we come with you?
Yeah. Whoever was working that day got invited.
Oh.
And I did it because I wanted people to be able to see it. So
yeah.
We did it at lunch. It was great. It's a great little theater. It's not that big. It probably seats 100 people at most.
Yeah, it's not a large.
Maybe less.
Right.
And I will say, she starts talking about the ornate molding and this and that.
Yeah.
It did make me wish that we had gone off the lot and filmed at Man's Chinese Theater or... one of the old movie palaces. It would have been cool.
Even the Egyptian theater on Hollywood. That would have been
nice. Or the Egyptian, something. Because this was a tiny little screening room.
Exactly.
It was not as ornate as the dialogue led you to believe.
This is a good size for a few studio execs. But, in terms of a massive ornate, this is supposed to be a replica of the old Palace Theater in Chicago, built in 1932. And it wouldn't be that size. It'd be bigger than that, for sure.
It'd be 2,000 seats and giant. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they're watching a 3D movie. Yeah. Tom hands her some 3D glasses. She goes, oh, protective glasses? That's very funny. No, it's a 3D movie, and they're going to be watching the Black Lagoon movie, the Creature from the Black Lagoon,
which they called Revenge of the Creature instead. Did the gum stepping thing happen here, where she stepped on gum? Was that
stepped on gum.
That's a cute little nice detail moment. Yeah.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon, I have a connection to that. Those old B movies as well.
Yeah.
There's an editor named Mitch Stanton who I did a lot of Dawson's Creek and some other shows with. Mitch's mom was the female star of The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
No.
She's the famous
she's
one.
She's the famous,
like,
yeah, she's the one doing the screaming.
In the photo, that's wow. Mitch's mom. And so I think she just passed away the last few years, but Mitch got her to write a book about her life in Hollywood and about being a B-movie actress back in the day. So it was fun to see that title come up in our show and kind of go, oh, that's Mitch's mom. That's cool.
Yeah. My favorite part of this scene is when you turn to Torres and say, people didn't go to the movies just for the movies, you know? And she goes, really? What did they go for? And you go, well, I'll try to demonstrate. When you said, well, I'll try to demonstrate, it was basically the same as yes, ma'am, but it was the flirty version of yes, ma'am is what happened. So
it's Tom Paris.
That's try
Tom.
To demonstrate. Yeah, it was a very, you know.
And I like the classic, like, oh, I got to stretch.
Yeah, she's like, crick in your neck. Yeah.
Classic movie date.
Yeah.
Ropes. It was fun.
God.
But anyway, someone shushes us and that's not very nice. So I think one of us deletes the audience. I can't remember.
Well, she says, because Torres says, you know, it would be a lot more fun if we were alone. This is after being shushed, and that's when Paris deletes the audience. So you delete it. You say delete audience, but of course
delete the audience, and then the front row. We see one person in the front row. Looks like they're asleep.
Yeah,
and we get up, we walk down, and it's Tabor.
Yeah, well, and actually, Torres recognizes Tabor from the back of his head too. She's like, "Oh, it's Tabor." Mm-hmm. And then you guys walk down and see him, and a little freaky because his eyes are wide open, and he's just catatonic is what he is.
Yes.
So we don't know. We have no clue what happened.
No clue. So we go to sick bay. Tabor's in the clamshell. Doc says he's got microfractures in his skull.
Yeah.
But they can't find the cause and he's in a coma.
Yeah. But boy, he looks good in a coma. Yeah.
He does.
I've never
he
seen anyone as handsome and good looking as that in a coma. So
in a coma. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chakotay asks the doctor, you know, we've got to find out what's wrong. We cut to the theater. And Tuvok is there looking at the 3D glasses, which I thought was funny. And I think B'Elanna says something like, Tabor was invincible before this. Like he was a tough guy.
They said that he had his own personal force field. They would joke about this because he'd gone through all these firefights as a Maquis and didn't even get a scratch or any scuffle on his clothing. He was completely untouched. So his clothes didn't even get dirty.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tuvok says, well, maybe he still has his force field because he's still alive. So now we know he's alive.
Still alive. So, yeah. And Harry walks in and says, Commander, I've reviewed the sensor logs for 4 hours that Tabor was in here and all systems were operating normally. Safeties were all online.
Yeah.
And Tuvok says, we'll run a level 5 diagnostic on the logs. And then Janeway calls Tuvok to sickbay. But right here is the biggest hole in this episode for me.
Why?
Because. All right. I have a house back in Utah and we've got a half dozen or more Nest cameras around for security cameras, watching the yard, watching the entryway. Okay. This is a Starfleet vessel on a holodeck that has to record not only the holodeck image data, but the humans that interact. And yet somehow all we can come up with is a shadow. Like there would be camera recordings of everything. Like you can't commit a crime on a Starfleet ship without being recorded. I'm sorry. There's got to be cameras everywhere. And for some reason, we just can't figure out what happened in the holodeck. There's only a shadow. That to me was a problem the whole time. I was
I didn't have a problem. Well, okay. Let's talk about this. Now there are cameras everywhere, okay? But in 1999, 2000, there were not cameras everywhere. So, so you got to just
cut some slack.
Go, man. Yeah, because I feel like
it's a hard one. It doesn't age well for me, this one.
I get it, but I get
we've got to have a mystery for Tuvok to go solve. I get it. But I wish they had said, like, there was a power surge or something.
Yeah.
That our data was deleted. Any simple thing to address, like, our, you know, onboard tracking data. You know, we had a power surge and something. Anyway, that's all.
For me, I just want to say, a lot of questions were answered because I've seen images of the 3D glasses on Paris, on Torres, on Janeway, on Tuvok. And I've always wondered, what episode is that? And now I know it's this episode. Yes. And there's another shot that is oftentimes seen on social media. And it takes place on the bridge when Harry is sort of acting captain and Chakotay comes in and phasers him. So the shot is really of me standing up, turning towards Chakotay, and it shows the phaser beam hitting right at my chest. And I've got this really wide grin, like smile, as I'm getting shot. And I'm like, what? Where's that from? It is also from this episode, but I paused it, froze it, and went backwards and forwards. I never smile. So someone must have photoshopped the smile in as I'm getting shot, standing there looking at Chakotay, because that smile does not exist. And I rewound that. I spent 15 minutes trying to stop.
I wonder if it was the photo came from a rehearsal, because remember they would have set photographers there.
Maybe. Yeah.
And we might not have been filming, and they would take photos usually during the rehearsal, because they wouldn't take it during the filming, because you'd hear the cameras going. So the set photographers would take publicity shots.
Yep.
And they had these boxes they would put around the camera, because they used to shoot photos on film. Now they have digital cameras that are silent. But back then, the mechanics, the clicking.
Yeah.
And they'd have to put this soundproofing box around their camera. It was
a silencer for a gun. This was a silencer for a camera, is what it was.
Do you remember that box?
I do remember that box. Yeah.
And the photographers would come on with this, like, suitcase in front of their face to silence their their camera. It was very funny.
Do you recall? So maybe that's where the guy. Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. But what was that guy's name? Our main set photographer.
Can't remember.
Because now I feel like this would be a fabulous person to bring on to interview. Think about it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's been there for so many moments.
I think we had the same set photographer 99%.
I can see his face right now. I can see
every
him
now and
right
then
now.
We'd have another.
Someone would fill in for him every now and then, but it was the same guy for the most part, right? 97% of the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're right. So probably when he was taking that, maybe it's from there. Yeah.
For rehearsal or something.
Yeah.
So Tuvok gets called out of the holodeck investigation with the shadow. And I don't even know if the shadow was up yet, but the shadow.
No, it's not yet. It's
not
later.
Yeah. Janeway goes to sickbay next, and Tuvok comes in and she thinks that he was attacked, and basically in this scene she assigns Tuvok to investigate the whole thing. That's what happened in sickbay.
And Chakotay has to find out what he's been doing the last few weeks, so he's going to go access Tabor's duty roster.
And we have a shot in the hallway following Tuvok, who now has just been assigned the lead investigator in this mystery. It's like a steadicam shot following him down the hallway, the classic suspense kind of movie, on a mission down the hall, following him till he gets to the doors of Tabor's quarters. And he has to do a security override to get in.
That's right.
Can't get in right away.
Yeah.
And the door opens and he finds Jor.
Crewman Jor,
who was a friend of Tabor's, in there suspiciously inside his quarters.
I would have directed her to be a little bit more shocked, so it would have come off as a little bit more suspicious. You know, she was a little too subdued, I felt. Mm-hmm. But she's holding a book.
She says, I'm just here to get a book to read to Tabor.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read it out loud. I've heard it comforts comatose patients.
Mm-hmm.
Tuvok is very cold, very suspicious.
Oh, he starts questioning her immediately. Mm-hmm. Where were you earlier? Blah, blah, blah. You know, she said, I was in engineering. So he's already on his little sleuthing mission, trying to find out who's behind
this. Very suspicious of her. We have a little space flyby. We go to the ready room and Tuvok's there telling the captain, she's responsible. Jor is the suspect. He's sure.
He only has one suspect, is what he says.
He only has one.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a bad detective, I got to say.
Really?
Like, dude, you just met one person and you're convinced it's them. It seemed a little, you know, early to be made.
Oh, well, this is essentially the Chakotay eye rolling scene, because he's just like, why would they're really, really close friends? That's why she has access to his room.
Yeah.
They're like, this, and Tuvok's like, no, I don't think so. So he has
a
hunch.
Tuvok is like, I have an instinct or a hunch. It's not very Vulcan at all. Yeah. And Janeway even has to get involved. She's like, I can think of some other possibilities. And, it's a nice scene with Janeway and Tuvok. I love the simple framing choices. Again, Rick Colby's taste knocks it out of the park. He's got the simplest ways of framing things, but it's really beautifully shot, this little simple scene in the ready room.
Yeah.
We go to engineering next. The note I wrote down, we're in engineering. There's Yosa in there. There's Jor in there. I'm like, who are all these new faces saying lines? Like, what? Who are these people? I guess they've been there a lot, but we've never met them before. Yosa says pressure's fluctuating.
In 114. So section 114 or something, right?
Yeah.
So she tells him to go check the seals. He's there in the Jeffries tube, checking everything with a tricorder when all of the lights go out. Mm-hmm. He hails engineering, Yosa to engineering, no response. And all of a sudden, some flashlight turns on at the end of the Jeffries tube and starts shining in his face. And he's like, hello, hello, no answer. And now this is starting to freak him out a little bit. And you know what's interesting is that this is the first person to actually move on his backside backwards. Think about it, like typically when we're in the Jeffries tube, we're on hands and knees crawling, right? But he's actually on his bum
sliding
and he's sliding backwards. And I thought, hey, why didn't I do that? So this was, is one way to keep his face on camera, clearly, but still, you never see actors doing that. So,
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He seals the hatch after he gets out of that section, and he tries to seal the hatch, but it's overrided by whoever is on the other side, right?
So yes, he says computer locked the door, cannot comply, and finally the lights come the out of the hatch opens, the lights are right on top of him, and we know he's in trouble.
Yeah,
we go to sick bay. Doctor and Janeway are there.
Yeah,
he's in a coma. Yosa's in a coma. With his eyes open again.
Yeah.
Tabor's in the background, still in a coma. Chakotay, Tuvok are there. They have the same injury.
And this is where he looks like. The profile shot of Yosa looks just like Brian Fuller. I was like, wait a minute. So, yes. Same injuries. Same microfractures across his right temple. Neocortical readings are identical to Tabor's. So whoever knocked Tabor out, clearly knocked Yosa out. We know that at this point. And Tuvok asks, who discovered Yosa? And Janeway says, Crewman Jor. So maybe she is the guilty party. Chakotay hails Jor. No response. Janeway asks the computer to locate Jor in the mess hall. She sends Tuvok and Chakotay to the mess hall.
Yes, they go in the mess hall. It's dark.
It's
very dark. Which, by the way, I thought a dark mess hall as they walked by the windows.
Yeah.
The Starfield looked great. Because when the lights are down low, the Starfield, we have a big black velvet curtain with little shiny mirror, reflectors.
Yeah, little tiny crystals or whatever they sew into
something.
They
sew it into that black cloth. It often looks a little looks okay. But this shot, I thought it looked great.
I'll have to look at it again.
Great Starfield.
Okay.
They find Jor in the mess hall.
In the same type of coma with her eyes open.
And it's a cool shot because you see them go over and her face is in the foreground and they're out of focus behind her. And it was just, again,
good
Rick
job,
Colby.
Rick Colby.
Great taste. Go to sick bay. The doctor says, I love his first line. If this keeps up, I may have to open a special coma ward. he's put upon. Poor doctor. He's got all these injured people and totally. Just too much.
Chakotay hands Janeway a pad, asking her to look at the names. And if she notices anything peculiar, And of course, she says, "Huh, they're all Maquis." Now, here comes an interesting little bit of dialogue. Chakotay looks at Janeway and says, "Maybe someone on your crew couldn't put the past behind them." And then Janeway stops for a second and says,
"Yeah,
my crew?" And he's like, "Oh, our crew." So it was a little, it was like, a little tension there between mom and dad. And it
seemed like an innocent slip up.
Exactly.
But obviously later on, we're going to realize that
it's foreshadowing is what it is.
is brainwashing. Exactly.
Most definitely. Yeah. Five Maquis are in comas. Tuvok says it must be someone who has access to security protocols in order to escape detection, because no one can figure this out. And the doctor says that, well, they better find a way to protect the rest of the Maquis because he's running out of beds. He doesn't have enough bed space.
And this was all a Steadicam scene. This was beautifully staged. Mm-hmm. I love the Steadicam work in here. Great blocking.
Do you remember our Steadicam operator name? Guy's name?
I can picture him, but I can't.
Yeah. I want to say Greg for some reason, but maybe.
He looks like a Greg, but I don't think that's the right name.
All right. Let's keep going.
It was Marcella was his girlfriend. She was the focus puller. Or wife or girlfriend? Was it Marcella?
Marcella was the girlfriend of the guy that was the camera operator. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to keep that secret from Marvin. Yes. Do you remember this? Yes.
Yes, I do.
And when they found out they were a couple, I think he got released after that.
I don't remember. Yeah. But he came back doing Steadicam only. Yeah.
Did he? Okay.
What's his name? Marcella and...
fill in the blank. Yeah.
The guy that looked like Greg.
All right. We got to figure this
out.
Anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
We're in the mess hall. Chakotay is debriefing the remaining former Maquis. He wants them to stay alert and report anything suspicious to Tuvok. And Chell says, "I'd rather report to you, Chakotay, not to Tuvok." And another person chimes up saying, "I don't trust Tuvok at all. And that Tuvok didn't even care about the Maquis back then. So why should he care now?" And Torres says, "Look, that is ancient history. That happened so long ago." And Chakotay says, "Well, you know, the last thing we need is this outbreak of paranoia." He orders everyone to carry hand phasers. Are there any other type of phasers other than hand phasers? I mean, why would you say hand phasers?
As opposed to rifles?
But that's a phaser rifle, though. You say a rifle. You wouldn't say a phaser.
Yeah, I just didn't say phasers.
It was just funny to say hand phasers. It kind of pulled me out. And also, Chakotay says no one should go anywhere alone. It should be a buddy system, a partner system. And that is the end of that scene. Mm-hmm. We are now in the hollow movie house again. And here is where we have that little shadow
little exchange
here. Yeah.
I love this exchange. And Paris says... So Tuvok comes in. Tom and Harry are working on analyzing this. Paris says, "We thought maybe the intruder left behind some kind of negative image."
Yeah.
And Harry says, "Yes, displays photons. Tom figured that if we dampen the photonic ambience and enhance the polarity, we could..." And Tuvok interrupts him. "We can applaud Mr. Paris's ingenuity later. What have you found?" I'm like, what? Rude. That is rude.
It was so rude, especially because Tom is never the one that comes up with the science. You came up with the science. So I felt, look, this is like, you know how they say like a broken clock is always right twice a day. Yeah. Well, every now and then Tom Paris knows the science. And if he knows it, let him speak to it. And Tuvok shuts him down. He's like, no. Yeah.
It was funny. It was a funny little bit.
It was a funny bit. Yeah. We cannot tell who the attacker was, but we do know that someone was there from this idea from Tom of this displaced photons. Tuvok asks for an extrapolation of the assailant's height and weight. Harry says it's between 170 and 190 centimeters and maybe 75 kilograms. So it's an estimation.
They're all standing there looking at this kind of shadowy negative outline.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it with my eyeballs.
Yeah.
And I can tell it's Tuvok. You look at that shadow and I'm like, that shadow is definitely Tuvok. Why can't Tom and Harry see this?
Yeah.
What crazy world are we in? That's a Tuvok shadow. I can see it.
We're like, who could that be that has ears that point up like that? Yes. I'm not sure.
Yes, you can see the pointy ears. Yeah. Oh my God. Anyway, use your Nest. Just go to the Nest cameras. You'll see. Anyway, this is again the moment where I'm like,
Okay, fine. So fine. So visual effects should have made it more fuzzy, is what they should have done. Much fuzzier. It was a little bit too clear. You could almost see the skin tone. Yeah. So, all right. We've established that. Okay. We're in the corridor. Let's move on. Chell and Torres are walking and talking, and he's looking behind him very nervously, like he's just checking his six every second. Like, what's going on? What's going on?
He's very paranoid. And Chell says his line is. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
This ship with all its sensors, how could five people being attacked without leaving a trace?
Yeah.
And I literally stopped it. I'm like, yes, I'm with Chell on this. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. We have sensors, we have cameras. I can look at the shadow and see that it's Tuvok. What is wrong?
Anyway, I'm going to make you a t-shirt that says Team Chell on it because you are all on Chell's. Yeah,
I am on Team Chell.
You're with him. But I still think the funniest moment in this scene is they walk up to a turbo lift. It opens up. Seven walks out. And Seven walks out of camera view. And Chell looks at Seven walking away and says, could be her. And then the reaction on Roxanne's face. Oh, please. It was the best. It was just sort of like, come on, really? Stop doing this. And I just felt that she played it perfectly. She really did.
Great expression.
Briefing room.
I think it's briefing room. It was kind of vague where it was.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a briefing room. That's where Tuvok is conducting the interviews with various crew members. We see a crewman who's sitting down, who has just finished being interviewed. Tuvok says, that'll be all, but please send in Mr. Kim. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say right now that this interaction between myself and Tuvok.
Yes.
I hated it.
Why? What'd you hate about it? I'm curious because I had some thoughts about it as well, but I'm curious if we're on the same page.
Just because I played it too seriously.
Agreed.
Way too seriously. So what I did was I let in my, because I think towards the end of this, you know, season six, season seven, I my relationship with Tim Russ was very like, this is my older brother that gets on my nerves. Like we got on each other's nerves, I felt.
Really?
Or at least, yes. And so I think I took a lot of my own personal feelings towards Tim. Like I don't have that towards him now, but at the time, I think I took some of that antagonism and threw that into this scene where it should have been the tone that I should have played in this scene should have matched Roxanne and Chell, how Roxanne was like, please, this is not, it's not Seven of Nine. And I should have been like, are you kidding me? Me? It's not me. You know, and it wasn't like that. I was kind of angry and the tone was too serious. It should have been throw it away.
That's I agree with you. That's the note I had. Because he literally says, your sarcasm could be viewed as subterfuge. And I was like, he's not sarcastic.
He's not sarcastic. He's pissed defensive. Off. Yeah, he's very defensive. Yeah. Because when I say, you know, oh, well, I should have taken my Captain Proton comatizer. I mean, it's funny. Captain Proton is a funny. I was like, oh, I guess I should have taken my Captain Proton. You know, I took my comatizer and shot every single Maquis. Pew, pew, pew. I should have did that, you know?
Yeah.
Because then it plays better. And it just to me, and I had so many close-ups in that scene.
Yes. Yes, you did.
And what I noticed more than anything else was makeup department did not cover my mole. I had a mole, which I've since had removed. It was at the top of my lip because we're watching it. And Megan was like, oh, nice pimple. And I'm like, it wasn't a pimple. It was a mole. And I remember they would cover it with a little bit of cover on makeup. But in that
And
how often does Harry get an ECU? I mean, it's very rare that it's this tight
Rick
on
Colby.
My face.
Yeah, Rick Colby.
Colby brought,
he loves
brought
the
it.
Close-ups.
He loves it.
But, my favorite. Yeah. My favorite thing in this scene was Tuvok says to you, yes, I was looking at your communications. You got a letter from Dennis Kim. Dennis Kim is my manager in real life. My manager's name is Dennis Kim.
Are you being serious?
He got a letter from Dennis Kim.
Your real life manager's name is Dennis Kim?
Dennis Kim, yeah. Yeah, he was my first director agent. In fact, I think I remember when you shot the scene, Dennis was I'd just gotten my director agent back then.
Oh,
it was Dennis. He was an agent. Now he's a manager.
Yeah.
And I think I remember making this connection when we filmed it. I was like, Dennis Kim, I love it.
Did you did tell him. Does he know this?
I'll have to remind him. I think I have.
Bring it up. Yeah. It's funny. I mean,
we should bring Dennis Kim, my manager, onto the podcast.
Onto the podcast. See what he says about it.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah, yes. But yeah, I do feel like my performance needed to be much more layered. It was very one note, and I'm very, 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 very embarrassed that I put in that type of thing. But you know, it happens.
Worked on a different level. It worked on a different, in a different way. But I do agree with you. I would have loved to have seen the version that was just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about? Throw it away. And then also, there should have been concern at the end, because at the end of that, Tuvok gets, you know,
are you okay?
Exactly. It's like Tuvok, he starts drifting. He goes elsewhere. And that's when Harry should have been like, are you kidding? It's not me. Tuvok? You know, are you, what's happening with you? Like, I should have been, there should have been more perplexed and also more care, some concern and care about our tactical officer. This is the guy that's
hard,
in charge of all of our weapons.
It was hard to do that when you were so angry at him.
Exactly. I had backed myself into a corner I couldn't get out of. I was so pissed off, so angry, and so one note that it really did not have the nuances that it needed to pull off this scene.
All right, let's reshoot it.
Let me call Tim right now. Let's see what he's doing. All right.
The doctor calls Tuvok and says report to sickbay immediately. We go into sickbay and Tabor's awake.
Okay, not only is he awake, he's completely fine. It's just he's a little hungry. That's all he says, right?
He says, and Tuvok asks him, what do you remember? He says, I don't know. I was alone in the holodeck. And the next thing I knew, I woke up here. Like, I don't remember anything.
But the doctor does mention that his synaptic pathways stabilized on their own and that he did not need any type of, you know, anything to wake him up. He woke up on his own. He's totally fine. We're back in the corridors. Chakotay is walking with a Vulcan ex-Maquis crew member who... whose hair is very shiny. I just kept saying, that's really shiny hair. Chakotay and a former Vulcan ex-Maquis crew member are walking the corridors, and they see Chell. They catch up with Chell, who is alone, and Chakotay then admonishes Chell for being alone.
He says, where's your partner?
Yeah. And he says, who is your partner? And he's Torres. She told me that she can handle everything on her own. She doesn't need any help or partnership. And then Chakotay finds out that she is now in Cargo Bay 2. So he heads there and he passes off the Vulcan crew member to be the partner with Chell and heads over to Cargo Bay 2, which is where he eventually finds Torres unconscious against a wall in the corner. And that is when Tuvok appears out of thin air like David Copperfield and starts talking. This is a holy time. And this is the red flag for Chakotay when he's realizing what? And as he's trying to go for his phaser, Chakotay gets knocked back by this palm fist sort of punch that Tuvok
does. They have a nice
little
hand-to-hand fight here that I thought was really well done. But Tuvok ends up getting him in a hold and starts to mind meld with him.
Yeah, he says, let the mind awaken and focus on the task, my mind to your mind, my thoughts to your thoughts. So he passes this thing on to him. And it's very, very disturbing.
Who is Tuvok? Yeah. What's happening?
What's going
here?
On with Tuvok? We have no
clue. We go to space flyby. There's a captain's log supplemental. Janeway says, Chakotay and B'Elanna are the latest victims of our mysterious assailant. And I've decided to put the ship on a level 10 security alert. Non-essential personnel are confined to quarters and security teams are posted on all decks. Then we cut to a shot of two security crewmen walking down the hall with rifles at their hips. Like
one really tall one and then one shorter one.
We go to Cargo Bay 2 and Janeway is in there looking. Tuvok's looking for evidence inside. Janeway thinks like maybe this is a ghost or something.
Did he take a sample? What did he do? Because he tells that one crewman, do a metallurgical analysis of this. So I don't know what he was gathering, but clearly some type of evidence, whatever it was. And Janeway comes over, you said? Janeway walks over.
They talk. Janeway thinks it's a ghost. Tuvok says maybe we should conduct a seance.
Kind of funny. But in the end, Janeway says, look, you need to get some sleep. You've been up all
day. Take a break, dude.
Take a break.
Okay, so Tuvok goes to his quarters, lights his meditation lamp, he kneels down. I love the close wide lens. Suddenly he looks up at the ceiling in this David Livingston shot. And we have these flashbacks to some of these crewmen getting injured. We see Tabor in the cinema. You know, in the movie theater, we see Yosa in the Jeffries tube getting attacked, Chakotay getting attacked.
Yeah.
Tuvok is like thrown by this. He goes in the bathroom.
Well, he stumbles to the
stumbles.
From the main part of Club Tuvok. He heads to the restrooms and
yeah,
he
goes has a flashback. To his bathroom.
Yeah.
Yep. Chakotay hitting him.
Yeah, the attack
and then,
with Chakotay. Mm-hmm.
And then he looks down, pulls his shirt up, and he's got this huge bruise. Yeah. And I remember, oh yeah, Chakotay was a boxer. Of course he's got a big bruise.
Right. But before we get into the bathroom, before he shows a bruise, just want to say, so funny, because you know, he has the flashback and he's overheating or whatever. So he takes off the top part of his uniform,
yes,
which
uniform.
Again, that is not how our uniforms worked. Only for this scene, they gave him the two piece. And now he just has the undershirt and the black pants, which again, we don't wear it that way. But
so he takes off his top layer, which has the comm badge on it. Just want to note that here.
Oh,
takes off and throws it on the floor, then goes into the bathroom with just his shirt on.
And another comm badge magically appears on his shirt?
Not yet, but soon it will magically
appear. Okay, got it.
He's got his t-shirt. He looks at his bruise. There's a big bruise. And in the mirror, he sees the Bajoran from that teaser.
Yes.
He sees Tiro.
Who says,
and Tiro
resist
says,
your doubts. That's what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Not resistance is futile, but resist your doubts.
Yeah. Resist your doubts. And then Tuvok turns around and Tiro's not there.
Nobody.
And so Tuvok is like, I got to get out of here.
He
runs out, out the door, and we go into the hall. This is where it magically appears.
Oh my God.
He goes out in the hall in a t-shirt. Suddenly he's
it.
Got a combat on his t-shirt. I don't understand how he magically just has a combat, but he does. Anyway.
Got it. Good catch, but he does hear the Bajoran voice. He didn't see the Bajoran, but he hears the Bajoran speaking to him. And the Bajoran says, don't question your mission in his Bajoran ASMR way.
Yeah.
Hollow movie house. Is that where we're at?
Yeah.
Now?
We go in the hollow theater and Tuvok runs in. Harry and Janeway are in there. His shirt is untucked here, but he's got the comm badge on.
It would have been better if he showed up and it was gone. It was on there during the corridors, but it disappears by the time he's in the movie house.
Yeah, basically Tuvok isolates the date of the image, and then he says, you know, what is the height of the assailant, what is the height of Tuvok. So he's basically saying it's me.
Did you do a calculation?
And I did not do a calculation.
Okay, just so you know, every time the 7 years that we film this, we always use metric system because that's what the world uses except for the America. But as Americans, I'm sure you were the same thing. Every time we made any type of distance or thing in metric, we were like, what? How? What is that exactly in feet and in inches? Right. And I did it. I Googled it. Tuvok is 182 centimeters, which is 5'11", which is incorrect. He's taller than that. And I'm like, yes. I'm like, what are you guys doing? You know, Tim Russ is taller than that. Why
he's
would you say 182
or something?
He's 6'2", 6'1", 6'2", definitely. I'm 5'11". I say 5'10 and a half, so I round up. So I'm really 182 or 181, and Tuvok is not. So that made me sad. I was like, how can you not mix that up? How can you mess that up, right?
Yeah.
But during this revelation that he comes upon, he does have a hallucination. He does see the Bajoran again. He pulls out his phaser, which makes Harry do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears the Bajoran saying, ignore your doubts. Pogtemfa Batane. Tuvok asks, who are you? The Bajoran disappears. Tuvok then proclaims to Janeway that he is the guilty party. He is the one that has been attacking all the Maquis. And Janeway asks, how is that even possible? He has no idea and tells Janeway that for the safety of the crew, he must be confined to the brig immediately.
Yep.
And I just want to say, I like that Bajoran's phrase so much that maybe this can be our sort of secret thing that we say to all the other Voyager.
Pogtem Far Batane?
Yeah, like, I don't know, what happened is if we see someone else who's a Delta Flyer member, we say Pogtem Far, and the other person responds Batane. See what I'm saying? So you say, it's like a secret code, almost like how fraternities do that. Like, there's, you know, we could do something like
that. Yeah, but it's an evil phrase, though. I don't know if I like it for...
How is it evil? It means, but what does it mean? Awaken yourself. Like, it's just
awaken,
be awoke.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Okay.
It doesn't say like kill people, you know?
I guess not, but Tuvok is killing people when he says
he
it.
Is.
So.
He is.
All or he's not killing him, but he's mind melding them into a coma.
Is it too edgy of a phrase to use, you think, in public to say that?
I don't know. Maybe. Yes. Because somebody might go into, what if there's people that have been brainwashed and we accidentally trigger them into, it's like the Manchurian candidate here. So I don't know. It's a dangerous phrase. I wouldn't say it too much.
So there's going to be
even this podcast, we're putting out
a potentially dangerous phrase,
Pogtem Farbatone. I did it again. See?
So there are hidden Bajoran cells all across the world that when they're listening to this podcast, they're going to go ahead and take out all the
Starfleet. I think it's going to happen. You know, this podcast is powerful. And
it is. I agree with you.
Start a revolution. Anyway, we go to the brig. There's Tuvok meditating, doctor scanning him. Doctor says to Janeway, he wants to speak with you, but please stay outside of this force field.
Yeah.
Janeway is very, you know, she begins what becomes a long conversation with him around the brig. Tuvok, can you hear me?
Yeah.
He says that, yes, but I hear another voice. What's that voice telling you? Tuvok says it's a Bajoran incantation. The voice is Bajoran. He sees Tiro standing right beside Janeway, and he realizes that this all started after a letter from his son in the last data stream.
I think the most important thing from that brig is that he said, I reviewed every letter except my own.
So we go to sick bay and Chakotay's waking up. B'Elanna's waking up too. Tom is the nurse on duty.
But this is the big revelation that is Tuvok to the rest of the formerly comatose people, right? I love how she, Janeway asks you, is he medically cleared to leave now, Mr. Paris? Basically, can he leave? And he's Paris says, well, I don't see why not, but he should wear one of these. And he sticks a little cortical monitor onto Tuvok's.
Chakotay's neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, onto Chakotay. I made a note that Tom is a very kind nurse. He's
Your bedside manner is good.
Yes, his bedside manner is very good. I think he gets good Yelp reviews as a nurse here. So
at the end of this scene is basically Janeway saying, there's something I want to show you to Chakotay. So, yes. And it's basically the message from Tuvok's son. Sek is his name, and he's, you know, it's just a standard message about talking about studying and school and this and yada yada.
This happens in Astrometrics.
That's right.
Seven is there. They're looking at this letter. Seven says the signal was calibrated to correspond with Vulcan synaptic frequency.
That's right.
Tuvok wouldn't have been consciously aware of it.
Right.
And we realize that there's a message buried in this letter from the sun.
Yeah.
And inside the sun's message, suddenly Tiro sort of fritzes in and Chakotay recognizes him and says, it's Tiro Anidus.
Most importantly, he was thrown out though. Okay.
Yes.
So he was part of the Maquis because he was thrown out because of this experimentation with mind control. Because he thought this was a good way to recruit agents, basically, by using this mind control. And the Maquis were like, you know what? We're not going to be doing this anymore. You're a little bit too mumbo-jumbo-y.
You're too extreme for us.
No voodoo here. I'm sorry. We don't need
the
voodoo.
You're a fanatic and you can't be a part of it. Seven asks. Seven's like, why would he try to contact Tuvok? And then we go back to the brig and Tuvok's looking at the message on a pad from his son and seeing this message from Tiro. And he says, I remember I did meet Tiro once before. We spoke briefly. He was interested in Vulcan culture. That's all I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway says, well, maybe that's all he wanted you to remember.
Right.
That he was developing some kind of mind control. And suddenly Tuvok has a flashback. He does remember this, you know, whatever Tiro did to him.
Okay. Do you like the flashbacks when it goes into that sepia kind of tone, you know, where it looks?
Yeah. I thought it was good.
You okay with that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Was something that helped give it
a little structure, a little framework. Yeah.
A little framework.
Yeah. Okay.
But Janeway says, you know, maybe if we meditate together, you can remember more of this.
And maybe she can help guide him through the meditation. Yeah.
And I was like, Janeway, come on. Like, dude, you don't know about getting into, like, this is not your thing. This is like saying, I watched a couple of YouTube videos and I'm going to go build a nuclear bomb or something. Like, no. You leave this to professionals.
Yeah, it'd make more sense if, I mean, if Kes was still on the ship, she could have helped Tuvok maybe, go through this for sure. But Janeway, I don't know if that's in her wheelhouse. So, yeah.
But she's like, let me help you do this. They take the force field down and she goes into the brig with him. There's a bit of a time cut. And he is remembering now being strapped down on Tiro's lab bed.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff on his face, little blinking lights and everything. Yeah.
And Tuvok says in this flashback that he's been trained to resist mind control.
Yeah.
And Tiro says, yes, that's the rational, logical part of you, but I want to reach your inner fire, your spirit. And Tuvok's like, no, 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 please don't. And Tiro shoves this like needle or something into his
cranium.
Head.
Yeah, that looked very painful. But it's also interesting in that in the very beginning of this scene, Tiro is talking about, it is Lieutenant, isn't it? I'm sure your Maquis comrades would be. I'm making Tiro sound like Mr. Burns from Simpsons. It is Lieutenant, isn't it? I'm sure your Maquis comrades would be interested to know your Starfleet rank. So really, Tiro knew all along that Tuvok was a double agent, but he kept it quiet because he felt this is perfect. This is exactly what I need. You know, I'm going to use you as the catalyst for reawakening everyone else that's a Maquis. But also now, in hindsight, now you realize Tiro tweaked with everybody. Am I right? Do you, is that what you get from this? Like he tweaked Chakotay's brain, Torres's brain, everyone's brain, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
I think so. It's not clear, but I think that's what I got out of it.
Okay.
He comes out of this vision. He's freaking out, shoves the captain.
Yeah.
But she says, don't shoot. And we go to Astrometrics. Chakotay's with Seven. Tuvok uses his comm badge, which he happened to have kept on his t-shirt, to call Chakotay. And, you know, if they hadn't cheated that comm badge on his t-shirt, he wouldn't be able to do this right now, but he calls Chakotay and says, Pogtemphar Batane. And then Chakotay turns and says, I understand, and heads out.
Should we have a Pogtemphar Batane shirt?
Maybe, maybe.
Okay.
Just check. It could start a whole rebellion, though. I don't know. It's this. We don't want to play with fire.
Don't be. It's not like a Ouija board. Come on. All right. Where are we?
Janeway is back in the brig. She wants to know, what does this mean, Pogtemphar Batane? And, Tuvok says it's a time of awakening.
It's a holy time.
Yeah. And then we see Tiro again. He says, focus on your instructions. So we go out in the hall. Chakotay is on a mission. We go to sick bay. The doctor and Tom are working. There's an alert to the doctor from Chakotay's cortical monitor. And just as the doctor says, you know, ask the computer, where is Chakotay? Chakotay walks in and says, I'm in sick bay.
And no, he doesn't say, the computer says Commander Chakotay is in sickbay as he's walking in. All he says is, computer, deactivate the EMH.
That's what it is.
And then Commander? And then you get shot. Did you like your reaction?
I did. I wrote good.
You always are very like, you do that.
Be good.
You sound like you're being hurt. Good job.
Yeah.
Dying or getting Tom shocked.
Tom gets phasered. Shot. B'Elanna wakes up and Chakotay says Pogtemphar Batane to her. She says, I understand, and goes.
Yeah.
Did you notice, by the way, when she woke up from her coma, she had less makeup on than normal? She
I did looked not like notice she that. Had been sick. Interesting.
They played her a little more like, oh, she really has been in, which I thought was a nice little detail.
Yeah, and that's a nice touch.
We go out into the hallway. B'Elanna and Chakotay are with Maquis. They've got weapons. Chakotay goes into the turbo lift. We go back to Janeway.
In the brig, with Tuvok. Okay.
In the brig, and she's like, stay focused on me.
So Tiro says, complete your mission, Pogtemphar Batane. And Tuvok goes, you don't control me. He screams that
he
at
screamed
Tiro.
It.
Yeah. Janeway still doesn't understand what's happening because she says in the beginning of the scene in the brig, why were you using mind melds? Like, what did Tiro want? Like, what does he want you to do? Like, she's still trying to. And Tuvok's like, to awaken the others. That's it.
We go to the bridge.
Yep.
Chakotay walks in and Harry stands up and he says, good to see you, Commander. And Chakotay says, it's good to be back, and shoots Harry. Just shoots him.
I think I reacted fairly well to that shot.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. It's very shocking. All right, we're back in the brig.
take over the bridge.
Yeah, they take over the bridge. Everyone gets shot. We're back in the brig. Red alert is sounding. Janeway is hailing. She goes, "Janeway to bridge, report." And there is nothing.
Nothing. We go to engineering, I think, next, right? Torres and the Maquis come in the door, and they are shooting.
They're just shooting everybody. They didn't take everyone out. Yeah.
Yeah. So Torres in her Maquis outfit and other Maquis start taking over engineering. Mm-hmm. We go to the hallway, and Janeway is walking down the hallway and suddenly with someone, and suddenly they're shot from behind.
Yeah.
They're ruthless.
Yeah.
And Chakotay says he's taking over control of the ship.
Yeah. Well, I just love her reaction. What the hell are you doing? And he's like, mm-hmm. I think it's obvious. I'm taking control of your ship. Mm-hmm. So all the Starfleet personnel will be locked in their quarters within the hour. And he puts Janeway in the brig. Mm-hmm. Janeway does say, like, you know, she knows something's going on. She's like, what did Tiro do to you? And Chakotay says, well, he simply helped us remember who we are. We're Maquis. And Janeway's like, wait a minute. You know the rebellion ended 3 years ago? And Chakotay's like, well, in the Alpha Quadrant, but not on this ship. So yeah. I like that writing. Mm-hmm. So everything is secure. The whole rebellion happens, and it happened. It goes off without a hitch, because who's going to expect to be shot by your fellow crewmate, right? So you're not going to get that done. Janeway's now in the brig, and she's just like saying, this doesn't make any sense. Like, there's nothing that you're going to gain from this rebellion, basically. You know, I mean, we're still light years away from Earth. And anyone in this quadrant has no clue or no understanding of the Maquis and, you know, rebellion. They don't even know what the Maquis are. And, you know, Janeway's trying to tell Chakotay that Tiro is the one that's been influencing you.
Brainwashing them. Yeah.
It's funny because Tuvok kind of changes sides a little bit here, right? So,
well, they switch places. Yeah. When Chakotay puts Janeway in the brig, there's a moment where Tuvok starts to step out and they're trading places.
Now, well, before Tuvok's... he steps out, he looks at Chakotay and says, your orders, Captain. And that's when he steps out after that, because Chakotay says, take your station. And then he walks out. Right. Mm-hmm. And we have a captain's log from Chakotay. Now, this is probably the only time that we have a Chakotay captain's log in the entire 7 years. And he says, Voyager is now under his command. They're en route to an M-class planet where they will basically drop off all the Starfleet crew members.
Yep.
And let them go and live their life on some M-class planet.
M-class planet in the Delta Quadrant. This sounds bad to me. This is bad.
No, it sounds like what the Kazon do to us. So,
all right. We go on the bridge, and all the Maquis are now running the bridge.
Wearing Maquis stuff now. Nobody's wearing Starfleet any longer.
Yeah. And Jor is driving the ship.
Jor's driving.
She's sitting in my chair. What the heck? Balana comes down. Jor says, we're in range. And Torres says, yeah, it looks like a nice place for a Federation colony. Take us into orbit. Mm-hmm. And Chakotay calls Tuvok to go to the ready room.
Yeah. He's like, come on. I just got to talk to you about something really quickly. I just want to talk about breakfast or lunch or whatever.
We go in, Chakotay offers a drink to celebrate. So a Vulcan brandy.
Yeah.
Which is very nice. Different than Janeway's coffee. Chakotay likes to drink brandy in there.
Exactly. And also what's different is we have Ayala standing guard there to make sure no funny business happens. But that is also a little bit of a red flag to cue you to knowing that something is up.
Something's up. Basically, Chakotay says, you know, you were a double agent before. You know, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
And I need you to prove your loyalty. So the door opens. They bring Janeway in. Chakotay says, kill her. And so this
phaser is set to kill. Here we go. Killer. Do the job. Yeah.
And Tuvok thinks and looks, and then he does ultimately raise the phaser up. Yeah. Hits the button, but it kind of stutters.
But Janeway has. But before this happens, we must say Janeway is talking. She's not just taking it. She's this is Tiro controlling you. You said you weren't going to hurt anybody. You know, you're in control of your actions, Tuvok. Don't do this, you know, please don't do this. And of course he does shoot her, or tries to shoot her.
Or he pushes the button
out. Yeah.
Fritzes out. And Tuvok goes, defective.
Yeah.
So Chakotay says, you passed, you were willing to kill her. It appears.
Right.
And
Ayala leaves. Ayala leaves, and the minute Chakotay turns his back and he starts talking about tactical issues to review, that's when Tuvok jumps and makes his move.
He neck pinches him
to unconsciousness, correct? And then mind melds him to give him the correct information to get him out of this crazy, you know, espionage secret cell thing. Yeah, this brainwashing thing that's happening. And Chakotay gets back on the bridge with Tuvok. And this is
I love Torres. She says, Torres, as they walk back in, she goes, Kim and Paris engineered a little breakout on deck 6. We've contained them all behind a force field. I just laughed about the breakout scene with Harry. Totally. And Tom.
But my note on that was just that she was completely emotionless when she said that. Yeah. Like, she doesn't give a poop about you any longer.
Yeah.
No care, no concern for Tom Paris, her true love. Or Harry Kim, her best friend, and just talks about us like we're the Keystone Cops. Kim and Paris engineered a little breakout, whatever that is. And then just down talks us a little bit. So it was funny, but also
sad.
It's sad. Yeah. It was like, what? This is not the Tory.
She's brainwashed.
She is brainwashed.
But Chakotay says to her, you know, this planet that we were going to put them all on, it's no good. We can't do it.
Yeah.
And Torres says, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
it seems fine.
Yeah,
and he says, "Yeah, we're gonna have to scan it some more." She goes, "We can scan from the bridge right here, and you can feel kind of something's
happening." Yeah,
yeah. She reaches to grab her weapon, and Chakotay points the phaser at her. Tuvok draws, and she is ordered to stand down. Mm-hmm. So we realize Chakotay is back on the right side of things. Yeah. Tuvok has turned him back. We go to the brig. Chakotay frees the captain here. We learn that another mind melt from Tuvok fixed him.
When he says, Chakotay says, I thought you might like your ship back. The look on Janeway's face.
Oh, yes.
Before she says no more rebellion, because she's, oh my God. It's priceless. It's some of the best acting from Kate Mulgrew right there, because she's restraining herself as much as she can. And in that line, when she says no more rebellion, it was perfect the way she said it. Yeah.
It was a loaded
death stare. Yes.
But she is free. She has her ship back. We go out in the hallway. Tuvok and Chakotay are walking down the hall. Tuvok's got a pad. Chakotay says, you're ready for the attack of the lobster people.
Yeah.
Chakotay says that. And Tuvok says, well, I haven't finished my rounds. Chakotay grabs.
Well, actually, he says, I'm not familiar with that species, because like, he doesn't know if the lobster people are real or not.
Right.
Right. But he hasn't completed his rounds. And Chakotay just grabs his pad from him and says, well, you've completed them now. So you're done.
You're done now. They go inside the theater. We're back at the movie theater on the holodeck.
Yeah.
It's a full house this time. Neelix offers some popcorn, buttered or unbuttered.
Unbuttered.
And my first thought is like, why would you even offer unbuttered popcorn? Like, of course, buttered. Always buttered.
Well, Robbie, there's some people who don't want butter. But you know what's so funny?
Yes.
I typically say unbuttered because I don't want the extra butter. But I always feel like there's still butter in the unbuttered as well. It's never clearly no butter.
I order buttered and then add more butter.
Do you really? Wow.
I love buttered popcorn. So
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you Butter McNeil.
Butter. Yeah, butters. Janeway says... Janeway says to Tuvok, he sits down, and Janeway says, how did you know that phaser wasn't charged? And Tuvok says, well, Chakotay doubted my loyalty. He wouldn't have given me an active weapon.
Yeah.
And Janeway's like, ooh, not exactly ironclad logic.
Tuvok says, call it a hunch. And I'm just wondering, Robbie, do you think hunch translates into Italian, German, Spanish, French? Is there... there a word for hunch? Maybe not. I don't know. So, but I will say this. In that scene, that establishing shot where it shows everybody, the wide shot, I turn around to you after I sit down with random person, and I kind of tease you or do something. I turn around to you, and you don't react to me at all. And I'm like, what the? And then it started making me remember that I chose that consciously. I was like, okay, I'm going to sit down, but I'm going to turn to my buddy and sort of razz him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like I remember that happening, filming that. And I remember thinking, why isn't Robbie playing with me on this one?
I don't remember that at all.
It's just like, okay.
I was probably like, are we done the scene? Can we get out of here, please?
Just come on, Robbie. You're the one that needs to go. Yeah. Okay. Yes, I get it. I get it. But I was wondering what happened. But you don't.
I did like Torres at the end when Tuvok and Janeway were talking. She, between them, goes shh from behind.
Yeah, she shushes them. Yeah.
She shushes them.
Yeah, and they put on their 3D glasses. And that's a shot. I love that shot of Tuvok and Janeway sitting there with the 3D glasses on. It's such a great shot. I really love it.
End of episode.
Yeah. What's your lesson? Do you have a lesson from this overall thing?
This was a hard one for me. It was not my favorite episode, I will say. I guess the lesson to me is trust your true nature, that hunches or your gut is stronger than any kind of brainwashing or outside voices that, you know, trust yourself. That's the lesson for me. What about you?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It was also hard for me. I mean, my most obvious thing was if you are around a loved one or a friend who seems to be acting very bizarre, maybe they are a victim of mind control. So be a little generous and be a little compassionate, empathetic on that one. So I mean, it's clearly a ridiculous lesson, but it was it was also difficult for me to figure out.
Yeah.
But I did like this episode, though, much more than you did. Much more. I thought I liked the dialogue. There were some great moments there. And just small little details, like stepping on the gum inside there, you know, like who, you know, putting that in there. I enjoyed the little tiny nuances. I felt like the weakest link was my scene with Tuvok of this entire episode. I think changed it for me. And I know you disagree with that. But overall, I really, really enjoyed this episode.
Well,
and
what is your rating first? Yeah,
my rating is going to be, I'm going to give it an 8.5. So I'm going to push it up there.
Oh, my
you
God.
You just gave me the emoji, the shocked emoji face.
Wow.
Yeah. That's where I stand on this one. I like the retro side of it with the movie house. I like the whodunit. It's like a little, you know, it's a little mystery going on. I mean, there's so many elements going on that it kept me engaged and entertained, and you name it. I liked it.
I'm going to give it a 5.9.
Wait, did you change that from because I was so high? You try to come closer to me? Okay.
No, I was 5.9 always.
Okay. All right, fine.
5.9 is my rating just because I just didn't fundamentally buy that they couldn't solve who is, like, there needed to be an answer
to
that.
If the displaced photons were really murky and fuzzy and you couldn't make out that it was Tuvok, would you have bought into it more then? Or
I think if every time someone was attacked that you know Tuvok was doing something to the ship to hide his trail. Maybe I would have bought it more. It needed something more. It was just a little too simplistic for me, this story.
And all right, 5.9.
Okay.
Our admirals and captains average rating.
Our
is...
captains and admirals average rating for repression is 7.2.
You had a pause when you went, the average rating is, you went four. The episode, like, I thought you were saying it was 4.something.
7.2. So kind of almost right in the middle of you and I.
Between you and me. Yeah. So there's some people who love this episode, and there's some people who think this episode is not the best.
I feel like this would be a very divided episode. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people in the middle. I think that 7.2 is high numbers and low numbers.
Yeah.
Would be my guess. Be my guess. Yeah. All right. There you go. There you go. There we have it. Crime solved.
We know who it is. Okay. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to this week's episode, Repression. Join Robbie and I next week when we recap and discuss the episode, Critical Care.
Oh, okay.
Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.